Welcome to the Subtle Reformation Podcast. We're so glad that you can join us. I'm one of the hosts, Ben.
And I'm Stephen. And we're really glad that you've joined us to listen to us muse about formation and what it means for who and how we can be in this world.
Hello everybody, it's Ben here. Thank you so much for being a part of the Subtle Reformation. Whether you've listened to some of our episodes or this is your first one, it's great to have you joining with us today. Now, before we dive into today's conversation, we've had someone call in with a question that we thought would be great to engage with, particularly as it leads into this conversation. So, here's the question from one of our listeners today.
Hey guys, great job on the podcast. Really loving the content you're putting out. Highly relevant to where I'm at with my beginning of this formation journey. Just wondering, for someone who is quite time poor, works full time like me, how would you recommend going about learning these lessons of formation and really finding the best way to do it without a set curriculum or structure? Would appreciate your thoughts around this. Thanks.
Seb, thanks so much for your question, mate. We really appreciate you engaging and knowing that this is stirring some thoughts and some questions for people like you and maybe some others as well. Seb, as Stephen and I talked about this question, we actually feel like potentially the answer to your question is found in today's episode. So we've cut it in here at the start to just let you know that we actually think that this episode, where we talk about the disciplines of collision, where really we kind of talk about how some of the spiritual disciplines are actually an invitation to consistent formation, is something really important for you and for many others who are actually thinking about how do I do formation outside of the classroom, outside of a structured environment. And so I think that if you listen to today's episode, you'll really get something out of it around how can I do formation consistently and regularly. One of my favorite quotes around formation is this, that God comes dressed to us as our everyday life. And I think the disciplines are a really important part of that. So mate, I hope that you enjoy this. And if you have any further questions, please feel free to send them through. And if any of our listeners have any other questions, we'd love to continue to hear from you guys and hopefully provide us a content that helps you to continue to go on the journey of formation.
Well, good morning, Stephen. How are you doing this morning?
Yeah, good, mate. Got a good night's sleep and woke up on my own terms rather than, you know, a strange animal scratching on my roof or one of the cats waking us up. So feeling good, mate.
That is nice. Am I seeing the glow of a fire on your screen right now?
Oh, I wish. The fire's upstairs.
Okay. You just got this nice little red glow that looks like there's a fire flickering away.
I was actually, if we could get this over in a hurry, because it's really cold down this end of the house.
Okay. No, I'll definitely keep that in mind.
When we started our pre-recording chat, it was pitch black, but the sun's just starting to come up here.
Oh, lovely. Well, there you go. You're finally getting into the day. I mean, you've obviously been up, but it seems like the rest of the world's catching up to you. Well, today, mate, we're going to jump into our second episode, which I'm really looking forward to. Last episode, we talked about this idea of renewal, which I found really, really insightful and definitely a lot to go away and think about. But today we're going to talk about this idea of disciplines. And for me, this has kind of been something that's been coming up in a lot of conversations with friends, with youth pastors, around this idea of how do I do disciplines, which I know are important, you know, to my formation, to my spiritual journey, when I feel like there's no rhythms, there's no routines, but I'm consistently disrupted in terms of this idea of what's normal for me. And so I thought that might be a great place for us to dive into today is this idea of, I guess, what are disciplines and what do you feel their role is in kind of our formation and in particular in this season as we're trying to navigate all things COVID at the moment?
So I think you and I have a good friend in common in Rowan Lewis. So I first met Rowan and worked with him for quite a long time, working on the Year in the Sun program together here in Melbourne. And then When that finished up, we got the band back together, as it were, and we started next at Whitley College, building on everything that we'd learned at Year in the Sun. And Rowan's probably the person I've worked with the longest. I think I've got a close to a 20-year association with him. My goodness, I'm getting old.
Yeah, wow, that's a long time.
And we've got this, and we've got this running joke, because I teach the spiritual formation components of that young adult formation program, both when it was Year in the Sun and now that it's next at Whitley. And we've kind of got this running joke. He puts into the material the phrase spiritual practices. And I, like initially it was an argument. I'm like, no, Rowan, they're spiritual disciplines. and often it was often the case, not exclusively, but often the case at Year in the Sun and also at Next, the kind of young adults who sort of turn up to participate in that program, for many of them, it's the last throw of the dice. This is, I've had a negative experience of church. I've been hurt by a church. I've been hurt by a youth or a young adult program. There's been some really significant existential questions in my life, relationships, sexuality, all of these sorts of things. This is it. This is kind of my last throw of the dice. If this doesn't work for me, I'm out of here, goodbye Christianity. And I'm aware, and it makes sense that Rowan's kind of sensitive to the fact that the last thing you want somebody in that state to see when they're enrolling in a program is the word discipline or rule. But they are, they're spiritual disciplines and they're spiritual rules. And I mean, we don't really give it much thought, right? But when you're in primary school or when you're in high school, often in maths, but sometimes in other subjects, when you need to draw a straight line, you don't even think, what's the first thing you reach for?
A ruler.
A ruler. Reach for a ruler because you need a rule to help you know, is this thing straight or is it not straight? One of the other really fascinating things is in both the Old and New Testaments, because they're written in different languages. Obviously, the Old Testament is Hebrew and the New Testament is Aramaic, which is kind of the street version of classical Greek. There are Hebrew and Greek words that are translated into the English, and it's a Latin word, the word is wicked. Mm-hmm. And wicked means twisted. And what you're supposed to do with something that is twisted is you untwist it. Back in the day when you had those radios with an antenna, or the mm-hmm. antenna in your car, you sort of bend it. You're thinking, oh no, I've got to straighten this thing, but I've got to straighten it in such a way that I don't snap it right off. And I think, unfortunately, particularly in Protestantism, our assumption is if it's wicked, you get rid of it. If it's wicked, you cut it off. But that's not the Old or New Testament biblical worldview at all. You don't get rid of it or cut it off. You straighten it. So it's the process of untangling it, untwisting it. That's the task. And you can't know whether the thing's straight unless you've got something that is straight to compare it to. And so that's pretty much, part of my first lecture when I do an introduction to spiritual disciplines.
Yeah.
I just did that in a couple of minutes. They're good. They are things that are important. And I wasn't planning on talking about this, but something really strange happened to me last year. I've been practicing jiu-jitsu for the last sort of 3 to 4 years.
Okay.
And last year I got my green belt. So green belt means I'm in the second half of the black belt journey. So I'm almost a black belt.
So you're getting
and
there.
And something really strange happened when I got my green belt, because up until my green belt, every time I would go to the dojo, if I stood in a certain way, one of the instructors, and it's complicated because all of the instructors are younger than me, except one. So it's really difficult being pushed around and told you're an idiot by someone younger than you. It's good. It's good for the ego, mate.
Yeah, I bet. But, keep you humble.
oh, boy. Especially if you don't listen, you end up on your backside facing the ceiling. And prior to getting my green belt, it was like, no, your feet are in the wrong place. No, your arms are in the wrong position. Your hips are in the wrong position. So you're wrong. You need to do it this way. And there was a very specific and prescribed way of doing things. And it got to the point where I didn't even have to look to or wait for my instructor. If I kind of, came out of a roll and I was standing in a particular way, I immediately looked down at my feet and I'd go, no, they're in the wrong place. But once I got my green belt, I'm parroting everything I've been taught to do. But once I got my green belt, the instructors started coming over going, no, you can't do that anymore. And I'm like, what do you mean I can't do that anymore? And they said, you can't follow the pattern anymore. The patterns were about learning the concepts, but from the green belt onwards, it is all about improvisation. And I said, well, can you kind of explain that a little bit further? And they said, well, you've talked to us about this injury in your right knee that you sustained as a kid. If you stand in the prescribed way, your knee is not going to be able to bear the weight. And they'd sort of kick me in the leg or do something to prove the point. So they said, rather than standing in the way in which we have taught you all of these years, how would you compensate for your particularity? And so in the second half of my martial arts journey, I'm having to unlearn everything they drilled into me and relearn it in a way that is specific and peculiar to me.
Yeah.
So it's all about improvisation. It's like, when a kid gets a guitar for the first time, it's like, I want to play rock and roll. It's like, no, you need to learn scales.
Yeah, that's right.
It's like, but I can't impress, the girls at school. I can't impress the boys at school doing scales. I need to play rock and roll.
Yeah, that's right. Go do the solo.
Yeah. So, you have to learn the rules before you can break the rules. So when I was introduced to spiritual disciplines, it wasn't from that framework that I've just described at all. And if anything, it was like, the disciplines are, Bible, prayer, and turn up to church. Those were kind of, and ironically, in a way, I think those are really oversimplified understandings of the disciplines. But there's, and I always get this wrong, there's classically 15 or 17. I can't remember the exact number.
Yeah. Okay.
Did you do them with me in that subject all of those years ago and you're in the sun?
Yeah, I did a couple of with you that I'd never heard of before, that's for sure. But I can't remember all of the ones that we did. But there was all like chastity and which wasn't the, like put on a belt and, a lock and, keep all your bits away. But was that idea of, I still remember it because you said chastity was the idea of honoring the other person as a person and, not an object. It was basically the practice of de-objectifying other people.
Very humanizing.
Yeah, yeah.
And I got that, that take on spiritual disciplines from a fellow by the name of Alan Roxburgh. So my undergraduate is actually missiology. It's not kind of theology or ministry. It's missiology. So I've always been interested in the role that culture plays in formation, but that's another conversation for another day. Yeah. And I remember, I think I was still doing my missiology degree at the time. And so he's a Canadian. He was brought over by the Churches of Christ. And I remember, he had a lot of really helpful things to say, but I remember he was talking about, he'd been a pastor and he'd realized that pastoring a church made it almost impossible to form people. So he kind of quit that, went off and did some study. And then he was asked to take on a pastorate and he said, look, I will, but it needs to be in this particular way. And what he did was they formed, they took some of the traditional spiritual disciplines and then they recontextualized them. And the one in particular, he talked about, I think he was in Vancouver and he was in a reasonably, it wasn't an impoverished suburb. It wasn't a working class suburb. It was kind of like an upper middle class suburb. I think it was even, an inner city suburb. So he's pastoring a church and one of the practices they came up with was kind of based on the tradition of hospitality. And it was something like, it was either take somebody out for a meal once a week or make somebody a meal at your home once a week. Mm-hmm. And he talked about, the first week people do it. Oh, this is very exciting. You know, I'm, you know, inviting people over and I'm cooking this, you know, really incredible dish. And the second week, it was still exciting, but not as exciting as it was in the first week. In the third week, it was like, oh, this takes a little bit of work and a little bit of effort. You know, the fourth week, why am I doing this again? Fifth week, geez, this is really an inconvenience. Sixth week, this is dumb. Seventh week, I hate this. Eighth week, Alan, you're an idiot. Why the hell are you getting us to do this? And all of a sudden, these aggressive tendencies start to come to the surface, that, you know, the sense of entitlement, the sense of inconvenience, all of these sorts of things. Mm. And I remember Alan saying, and there is the learning moment. So it doesn't actually have anything to do with the discipline. It's not the practicing of the discipline. It's the collision that the discipline creates.
Yeah.
When you practice a discipline, it precipitates a crisis, and who you really are comes out in that moment. And when you can see with clarity who you are when you're under pressure, who you are really, it's that, again, it's, you know, the stuff that we were talking about in the previous episode, Alcoholics Anonymous being a fantastic framework. It's almost as though the disciplines precede the formation framework. The disciplines help you see with clarity, oh my goodness, I'm not nearly as patient as I thought I was.
Yeah.
I'm not nearly as even tempered as I thought I was. Oh my goodness, I can't believe I'm so thoroughly addicted. After that awareness, then the disciplines can begin to play a role. So when I'm under pressure, I act in this way. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure if I did this with you guys, but often when I start the course on spiritual disciplines, when I teach it, I ask the question, you know, hands up, who's ever done something that they deeply regret? And all of the hands, you know, in the room go up. Who, after having done something they deeply regret, then then makes some kind of commitment, you know, I wished I didn't do that.
Yeah,
I regret it deeply. I wished I'd never do that. I wished that I would, you know, in the future that I will behave in a different way. And again, all of the hands go up. And then I ask the third question, you know, who, after resolving to be different, does exactly the same thing?
And again, you know, all the hands go up. Yeah.
And again, all of the hands go up. And then my fourth question is, how's your wishing working out? Is your wishing things to be different working out for you?
Yeah.
And then introducing this notion of when we are in a pressured situation, and pressure is different for different people, you know, as we mentioned in the previous episode, you know, for me, the pressure is to be right, to be correct. You know, for somebody else, it might be to receive positive feedback from others. You know, for another person, it might be a desire to be in control and make sure that they're on top of things. So when you can see that with clarity, and when you can see, when I'm under pressure, I behave in this way. So for example, I become quite nitpicky and pedantic. Yeah. And that, no one enjoys that. I don't even enjoy that. I feel like I have some sort of sense of control, but it's an illusion. I realize I'm badgering people. So then what we do, using the framework of the spiritual disciplines, is we say, okay, what's actually going to create life for others in that moment? My nitpicking and, you know, constantly drawing your attention to the things you're doing wrong, no one enjoys that. So what can I actually do with my experience, with my life, with what I know? How can I actually share that in such a way that it's going to create life for you?
Yeah.
And you think about it in really practical behavioral terms. What does the behavior look like? And then once you can nail that down, there's your spiritual discipline.
Yeah.
That's what you need to practice. You need to practice that. And it's the muscle memory thing. When I practice it, when I don't need to, when I'm surprised, the muscle memory will kick in, and I will do what I want to do without thinking. So the classic is, so myself and my three children, we all study martial arts. And the joke is, if you kind of startle one of us, one of the ways we talk about, so there's a roof block. You can see what I'm doing because we're using a camera. So a roof block is you put your hands over your head.
Oh, okay. And yep.
You try to put a pointy thing between you and the person. So if someone's coming at you, like if you're coming at someone and all of a sudden you're looking at an elbow, mm-hmm. you'll quickly pull back, right?
Yeah.
And we practice and we drill the roof block. So what happens in our house now is if you kind of startle one of our kids or me, if you're kind of walking in with the shopping and you sort of trip, it's not uncommon for us to kind of put our hands up and, yeah, and throw a pointy
thing. The elbows thing. Come out.
But and so, that's because it's muscle memory. So,
yeah.
So trying to figure out what are the behaviors that I want to practice in that moment of conflict, in that moment of crisis. And I practice them when I don't need to. So when I am ambushed, that's what will come out. So that's a very long and convoluted way that's how I would explain spiritual disciplines. But the work required before that is awareness, and disciplines have the capacity to actually create that crisis as well. So they kind of do two things.
Yeah. So you could.
I've talked a lot. You should probably talk a bit now, mate.
No, that's all good. Seriously, really good stuff. And I like that idea of the muscle memory in terms of disciplines help us, know how to, well, not know how to behave, but learn how to behave under pressure. I think that's a really great way of looking at it. I think in terms of like a reflection on what you've just said, I haven't really thought of disciplines in this idea of creating the collision. So I've always, I guess, thought of disciplines in this idea of going, oh, you know, so for me, I always have a constant tension with the need to be in control. And when things are feeling out of control, I try and control even more, which then is even more terrifying when things then seem to get further out of control. And so for me, in light of that, I recognized that was a problem for me. So I was like, okay, I need a spiritual discipline that helps me learn to be okay with not being in control. And so for me, that's been stillness to kind of go, well, I'm not doing anything, not saying anything, not actioning anything, and the world's still functioning and everything's still okay. But I've never thought about what are some disciplines that I need to do that I kind of go, I don't know if I want to do that one. That one doesn't seem very helpful. But now I'm thinking, maybe I'm telling myself it doesn't seem very helpful because I'm worried about what I might find in the midst of it. And that actually... That actually some of this might be that there's some disciplines that maybe I need to practice just to see what happens, you know, maybe if there's a collision that God might be wanting to bring into my life in a helpful, you know, holy invitation kind of way. If you've never practiced celebration before, and maybe that's because you're actually a little bit bitter and jaded and you need to remember the good things, you know, like, I don't know. I've never really, practiced some of those sort of disciplines before. And it's definitely made me think about that whole idea of, is there some things I'm avoiding because I'm worried about what I might crash into in the midst of them? So yeah, that's an interesting thought. I think that's really cool.
Mate, if only we were doing a video podcast, your face was telling so much of the story as well just then.
Yeah. Well, maybe in the future, but for today they won't get to see that story.
I think if you're happy for us to zero in on your experience, and just feel free to say no. I can't believe it. I just told the control freak we're going to be talking about your life in public.
Yeah.
I'll try and keep it generic, mate.
That's fine. I'm happy to go there.
But one of the things, because of, my own personality and my own life's experience, I walk away from everything I do. And the temptation is to look at all of the things I did wrong and then fix them for the next time. So the teaching of the spiritual disciplines these days is probably, there's been so many iterations. you possibly might not even recognize the material, even though I'm still following the same kind of logical structure in my mind as I did all of those years ago. But one of the things that we do these days is, when I teach in particularly in the Next context, and for those listening, Next is actually the name of the program. It's not a misuse of the word.
Yeah.
That's what we call the program. We teach spiritual formation as well as the Enneagram. So what we try and do is we try and match disciplines to Enneagram types. So you are a person who is familiar with the Enneagram.
Yep.
You feel that seeing the world through the lens of the eight is helpful. So the gold medal events, so I call them the gold medal events. They're sarcastically named. the gold medal event for the eight is submission, the practice of submission. And when, you know, when I sort of talk about it in generic terms, we look at its historical practice, how it's understood. And I think it might have been last year or the year before, but we had a student who was an eight, and they decided that what they were going to do is when they were in a conversation with somebody and they became aware of a tendency inside of them to want to correct or, and I want to use the word dominate, but in a dictionary sense, they just wanted to dominate the argument. No, you're not right. Let me explain to you, you know, why you're, I mean, this is a very crude example, right?
Yeah.
Let me explain, you're wrong. Let me explain to you why you're wrong. The moment they spotted that tendency in themselves, they made a decision that they were going to stop arguing their point and they were going to take on the point of view of the other person. And if it involved any kind of advice, they would actually do what the other person asked of them.
Wow.
So, exactly. So, you know, when I'm describing and I'm just thinking, well, that's my life, you know, because I think I'm wrong most of the time anyway. So, you know, other people's idea, but that's because I'm not an eight. That's why it's not my gold medal event. But for you, that touches the very core of, you know, the way in which you fundamentally see the world and the way that you understand the world and how you need to be in this world. But, you know, if we can just use our imaginations for a minute, can you imagine how that could potentially transform your relationships with people?
Yeah, totally. I mean, my wife is a strong woman, so I have happily and willingly learned to submit to her at home in terms of, you know, just not always having to be right and not always having to have it my way. And that's been easy because I love her. So that's like, you know, a tender place where it feels safe to submit. But yeah, I think about conversations with friends or at work, and I can definitely see that, that I guess willingness and desire to kind of dominate the conversations. And even if I am going to submit to you, there almost needs to be this sort of earned respect. Like, I'm really thankful that I've got like great leaders and great managers in my context. And so that's not an issue for me because I trust them and I know their heart and I know that what they're trying to do is, you know, for the best of myself and, you know, and our church and all of that. But it is hard sometimes, just even in small conversations, meeting other people. And there's times where I'll be in a social setting and it's like, you are so wrong. And I want to tell you all of the ways that you're wrong, but I know right now that it's not the right social move for me to do. But that, like hearing that story, genuinely, I'm like, wow, that's a serious, a serious gold medal act, as you said. Like, I don't know how I'd go doing that.
Yeah. So this fella, he chose to practice it once a day. Just at random when he became aware of it. And it's hilarious, you know, hearing back a week later, you know, because at the beginning of the day, there's this commitment, I'm open to, you sort of reconscientize, remind yourself, okay, I'm practicing this discipline, I need to be open that today. And then, of course, you know, they find themselves in the middle of what they perceive to be a pitched battle, and then they become aware and they're like, okay, I need to do this thing because I'm doing a course. This is my homework. I need to. And then they come back with these hilarious stories of transformation. And then, of course, you know, because, you know, personally, I reckon you need to be practicing disciplines for at least 90 days before you start to see a change in our habituated behavior.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, just because of the way the course was structured last year, they only had 2 weeks, but, you know, to practice those things. But, just some hilarious stories, some incredible moments of insight. But it really brings them to the issue, the actual issue for them. Because that's control's not the issue. Do you know what I mean? It's a symptom. And, I think I'm going to go to the grave saying this, you know, the number of times, because we, again, I'm not sure if we did this in your year, but for whatever reason, I'm the bunny who gets the job of having to talk about spirituality and its relationship to sexuality as well.
Yeah.
Yay me. Yeah. and I had a hunch many years ago, and the more I think about it, I think there's something in it. And I say this often, and I ask, you know, if you're going to repeat what I'm about to say, please be very careful in the way you repeat
it.
But I say to people, you know, if you find yourself, and I'm doing that thing with my fingers, you know, inadvertent
air quotation marks.
If you find yourself, if you're doing sexual sin, I say to people, you know, how have you gone trying to stop that kind of behavior? Not well. And so I say, look, just keep going, just keep sitting. But what I want you to do when you do that is I want you to listen to your body. What is your body trying to tell you? Because the sin is not the sin. The sin is actually a symptom. There's something more deeper and more profound, because as we know with all of the studies over the last 20 odd years, the chemical and the neurobiological stuff that is part of arousal, that has an incredibly powerful narcotic effect. It helps us feel better. And what we are doing is we are pursuing a state in the same way any addict pursues a thing in order to release the chemicals in the body so the pain they feel is deadened.
Yeah.
So that's actually not the thing. You know, what you're doing is not the thing. It's a symptom. Listen to your body. Listen to what it is that you are trying to do. Listen and feel the pain that it's trying to deaden, that it's trying to kill. And that will actually lead you to what is actually going on.
Yeah.
So, and it's all, I mean, it's all interrelated. I mean, I totally wasn't prepared, Ben, to be talking about sexuality this morning.
Yeah.
but it's all interrelated. And I think the reason why because I'm being contacted by, you know, former students or people who have heard me, you know, at a church service or a seminar or a conference somewhere. I'm being inundated with people now at this time in this kind of lockdown time.
Yeah.
Saying, can we talk about something I heard you say? And I think last episode we talked about really transformation seems to me only really can occur in a moment of crisis or in a moment of, you know, significant pain, either pain that's been inflicted upon you or when you realize you've inflicted significant pain on somebody else. But because we are all in lockdown and the spaces between our interactions, there's not nearly as much space between our interactions as there used to be. You know, for those of us who commute, you have, you know, anywhere between 20 minutes and an hour commuting somewhere. You have a whole bunch of experiences, and then you've got to commute at the end of the day to decompress, you know, to some degree. You know, the kids might jump on the bikes and go for a ride, so you've got some space. All of that has been removed. So we live in a much more compressed environment now. And so, so not only are we subject to more interactions per minute
yeah.
than previously, because I mean, if you are in a house with, you know, more than two people, you wake up and it's game on. It just doesn't stop until you fall asleep. There is no reprieve. And you know, everything is heightened. So the stuff that might have cropped up, you know, once a week, once a fortnight, once a month, it's now happening on a per hour, per minute basis. And we just don't we don't have the literal space, let alone the metaphoric space to go, what just happened there?
Yeah.
It's just coming at us thick and fast. And in many respects, the kind of crisis that I would try, like if someone were to say to me, you know, I need some help, can you help me work through this? You know, we talk through some kind of spiritual discipline or practice to precipitate that crisis. Don't need that anymore at the moment. It's just happening all of the time. And people are I find it just really punch drunk with, again, you know, sort of referring to that that quote we used in the last episode, you know, when we slow down long enough to really look at our lives, excuse me.
You're good.
We're terrified at its vast emptiness.
Yeah.
People are experiencing that without even like without any kind of intention of wanting to do any kind of work or going internally. So I think that's probably certainly a big part of why that's one of the questions these youth pastors are asking you when you say, you know, what are the things that you're grappling with at the moment?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's actually a really great insight. Like I know, you know, for myself, I'm an introvert. So this idea of, you know, working from home, you know, less people around at the start was really great. And I'm still really enjoying it. But I, like you said, I've been in a lot closer proximity to my wife, you know, both working from home, both enjoying that. But yeah, that I've never thought about that compressed nature of everything. Yeah. Like in the mornings before we had to work from home, I would kind of get an hour after she left for work where I would just get time to, you know, read and eat breakfast and, you know, pray, have a shower, get ready, keep it pretty low key. And then the same at the end of the day, I'd get home and have about an hour before she would get home because her commute was a lot further than mine. And now it's just like 5 o'clock rolls around and it's like, she'll call out my name. She'll like, Ben. And then there we are. We're like, we're right there. And I could have just had a terrible meeting where I feel very frustrated. And then she's coming into that straight away rather than, you know, an hour later when I've reflected and calmed down and sorted myself out and she comes home and I'm in a better space. So that's interesting. That's a good insight. It is a little bit more compressed at the moment.
It reminds me of when I did year 12, it was a long time ago, Ben, but we did the Vietnam War. And I remember reading, because I love history. I remember reading about the difference between the mental health of those returning from war in World War II compared to Vietnam. Mm-hmm. In World War II, when soldiers were repatriated home, it was a 3-month cruise on a ship.
Oh, okay.
So for 3 months, you had a 3-month duration with other soldiers who had experienced similar things. So you have this significant like amount of time. Session. Yeah, yeah.
For 3 months.
Before they invented group therapy. I don't know if they had invented group therapy in the 1940s. Compared to Vietnam, which was far more complicated. It wasn't as straightforward a conflict as World War II. Yep, there's Nazis killing everybody. It's reasonably straightforward.
Yeah.
Even if you are peace-loving and abhor violence, it's reasonably straightforward. Vietnam was a far more complicated, you know, they call it the dirty war.
Yeah.
24 hours, you would be back at home. You know, it was a plane flight.
Yeah.
And just this inability to adjust. And of course, you know, the American military have learned a lot about that. I think they, when they finish their tour of duty, they've got to spend some weeks now prior to heading back. They talk about re-entry and all that sort of stuff. But I was just reminded of that when you were kind of summarizing the environment in which we find ourselves.
Yeah. It's that quick, immediate return into those places. That's good. Hey, I think last question for today, what do you think is, if you know, we got people listening and they're going, this is really great, I'm finding this really insightful, how do I move forward from here? You know, like, how do I just start doing some disciplines? Do I need to think about, you know, who am I as a person and maybe some disciplines that, you know, I need to, you know, take on board to change behavior? Like, what do? Do I just start with any, or do I try and formulate what I think are the appropriate disciplines? Like, what's the way forward for people listening today?
Yeah, I hope this is not discouraging, but there's not really any quick fixes here. You've had some experience, you've done a subject, you've done some reading, you know, you did another subject at ACOM.
Yeah.
So you've had some experience. So you've actually got something to draw from. Mm-hmm. If you're just starting out, this is going to be a hell of a ride if you've never really thought about disciplines before, because it's like, you know, when I first started practicing martial arts again as an adult, you know, I remember the first, my very first night at the dojo. So I was, I'm 49 now. So I would have been about 43, 44.
Yeah.
I go to this dojo on a Friday night, and the first activity, I kid you not, the first activity they got us to do was you had to do a handstand against the wall, facing the wall, right?
Yeah.
And then you had to collapse out of the handstand into a roll. And I remember talking to the teacher afterward. I'll film it for you. I'll find a YouTube clip. I'll send
please
it to
do.
You. And I spoke to the teacher after, because he's lovely. He's become a really good friend. And I remember just saying, you need to understand, you know, you've been doing this for 15 years. You need to understand what it's like to do this as a beginner. I said, I was terrified. I said, if I was more embarrassed than I actually am, there was a really good chance I would never come back.
Yeah.
Interestingly, after giving that feedback and, you know, being around for a couple of years, they actually got me to start. I teach now, so I teach kids and teenagers martial arts. And the reason why they're really happy for me to be around is because I remember what it's like to start.
Yeah.
And when they're sort of, you know, when it's your first night at the dojo and they're like, oh, we're going to do this thing. And part of it means I'm going to practice on you and I'm going to throw you to the ground. You've got no idea how to fall to the ground. So that's when I remind the teacher and I say, hey, maybe we want to do some, so we call it, the Japanese word is ukemi, which is becoming a friend, befriending the ground.
You know, the ground is your friend.
So I might say, hey, maybe before we do that technique, let's introduce the kids to some ukemi. And then you can see the teacher going, oh, yeah, that's right. I forgot what it's like to be a beginner.
Yeah.
So if you're starting, and I think the reality is people are starting. They don't have a choice.
Yeah.
I remember many years ago, this might actually have been, I want to mention a name, but I don't want to embarrass the person.
Yeah.
It might have been your year. I remember talking about this stuff and saying, we're going to precipitate crises in your life. We're going to bring this stuff out. And I remember one of the students actually stood up. They were so agitated. They stood up and they said, what you're doing is very dangerous, Mr. Said. And I said, oh, you know, why is that? And they said, you're bringing out people's fears, some really painful, terrifying things. And I remember I responded by saying, but they're going to come out anyway.
Yeah.
These things will come out anyway. If I get you to practice a discipline and you have a collision and it comes out, it's going to come out. But if I don't, you're going to end up in a fight. You're going to end up in an argument. You're going to be under pressure. It's going to come out anyway.
Yeah.
And I guess if you've got no background and no frameworks for formation and disciplines, again, forgive me if I'm sounding like a broken record, but probably the Alcoholics Anonymous framework is the best one to begin with.
Yeah.
So when you see it, and it is really, when you see how ugly you can be, it's pretty depressing.
Yeah.
And, you know, but what they often say in addiction, you know, recovery circles is, but if you can see it, you're halfway there.
Yeah.
So if you've got no background, no frameworks, just see it. Just see it and record it somewhere in a way that's helpful, you know, notes on your phone or paper journal. Just start to record what you see. And I know this is really difficult to do because, you know, I've been on this, you know, on this train for probably close to 20 years now.
Mm.
And I think the sense of demoralization I feel when I see something is the same as it was 20 years ago. When you realize just how ugly, how brutal, how aggressive you can be, it's just like, oh man, I just, that's pretty ugly.
Yeah.
And I know this is really hard to practice, but when you see it, just don't judge it. Don't judge it. Just observe it and, you know, as best you can, give thanks to God for the gift of being able to see it.
Yeah.
And that might be the best place to start. Just recording it, recording what you see, you know, the stuff that's coming out under pressure.
Yeah.
Record it. Not as a, you know, not as a, another voice that condemns you, but I'm rubbish at remembering chapter and verse, but what's that one, you know, God corrects those whom he loves. Is it in Hebrews somewhere?
I think it's in Hebrews. And then I think there's something in Proverbs where it's like, you know, a father who loves a child disciplines them, you know, like keeps them on the right path. So, but yeah.
So when, you know, I remember when my kids were littler, you know, and they were still a little bit, you know, they were developing their coordination. Mm. You know, when a child falls over, the thought never entered my mind of saying something like, wow, you're really clumsy. Oh, geez, that was stupid. Like the thought just would not enter my mind that I would say something like that to a child. And, you know, most people, all things being equal, they would probably want to say something really encouraging. They'd want to draw attention to, and that's kind of our natural inclination. So why do we do that to ourselves?
Yeah.
You know, when we see ourselves fall over, why are we so scathing and so critical?
Yeah.
And so, and it's interesting, funnily enough, it was actually my sensei, the guy who runs the dojo.
Yeah.
He said this to me. He said, you know, when the children fall over or when they do something wrong, he said, you don't tell them off. He said, you're incredibly encouraging. You're probably one of the most, you know, encouraging teachers we have here at the dojo. And I could sort of sense he was trying to make a point. I didn't quite understand where he was going. Yeah. I was like, yeah. And he said, why don't you practice that same kindness upon yourself?
Yeah.
When you get it wrong on the mats.
Yeah.
And because I'm mindful that, you know, people who are listening, this may be their first crack at disciplines. So just observe and as best you can, try not to judge what you see, but just record it. And then I want to recommend a book, but I'm not sure which one. So I might have a bit of a think about it offline.
Yeah.
And then we can add it to the show notes.
Yeah. We'll put some books in the show notes for people to check out. I think that's a good way to do it.
Yeah. I want to say Celebration of Discipline by Willard, but I'm not sure that might be appropriate still. The other one, it was recommended to me and I've only just started rereading it again. I only got part way through it the first time round. I just started reading it again recently. It's called Mansions of the Heart.
Mm.
But let me have a think.
And
I'll have a bit of a think offline, and we'll put some recommendations in the notes.
That's good.
And depending on, because I know that you and I were saying that we would really like to make this a dialogue.
Yeah.
So if people are hearing this and they have specific questions, maybe we can, you know, respond to specific questions with some resources to get people going.
Yeah, totally.
But I want to say Well, let me say it, but it's it's such a crap cliche, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Be kind to yourself. And I remember when I heard, you know, be kind to yourself, I'm like, oh, you know, shut up. That's just weak, you know. But you know, the story I told just a few seconds ago about my sensei saying, you know, when other people get it wrong, you are incredibly supportive, you are kind and gentle with them, you are kind to others. Be exactly that same kind of kind to yourself. And that's how, that's when I stopped hearing be kind to yourself as just a rubbish cliche that people throw around because I can't think of anything intelligent to say.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's good. And I think it is a really important part of the journey. Like I remember talking to my counselor about, you know, just some of the stuff that I was going through. And he said to me, he said, your kind of view is when you fall down and you beat yourself up. And he said, your framework is increase the beatings until morale improves. Like, and
isn't that an eight motto?
Yeah. I was like, no, you're speaking my language. I get that. But it was like, how is morale ever going to improve if I continue the beatings? You know, no one ever goes, oh man, I'm so much more excited about, you know, whatever it is I'm doing because I've been beaten into submission. Like, so I think that, like you said, it can be a cliche, but it is such an important journey into the disciplines. It's like, instead of choosing to beat yourself up or to be angry and frustrated and annoyed at yourself, choose to be curious. Like, okay, this is happening. What's going on here? Why is this happening? And remember that, you know, at some point in our brokenness, we've taken on some habits, some thoughts, some ways of coping that, you know, got us to where we are now. But, you know, God is trying to strip us of them because there's something new that he's trying to lead us towards for the future that's going to not require those ways of thinking and being and doing something different instead. So, yeah, that's good. Brilliant.
Do you reckon we should wrap it up there, mate?
I think so. I think that's a great place to end. But it's been fantastic, again, to discuss all things disciplines. And I really appreciated your insights into some of that. And hopefully for those who have been listening, it's been really helpful, a good framework. But then you feel like you've got something to grab onto to go forward. But as Stephen said, if you do have any questions, please feel free to contact us. You should see in the show notes a little link to the Anchor app where you can leave voice messages. Or if you know Stephen or I personally, feel free to send us a message. We'd love to connect with you guys and support you in this journey of disciplines because they are super important, but also super difficult sometimes too. So, yeah. Well, thanks for joining us today. And Stephen, thanks for jumping on and sharing. It's been great. And I hope you guys have enjoyed it. And we'll see you again next time for the next episode, which will be great.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Hopefully see you soon.
Yeah, see ya.